From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank's guest is Dr. Patrick J. Michaels, who has served as president of the American Association of State Climatologists and program chair for the Committee on Applied Climatology of the American Meteorological Society. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
Today I want to talk about one of the most significant subjects that we could broach in the year 2019. If, in fact, climate change is what it is purported to be, we're going to spend tens of trillions of dollars of the global economy on this issue. And so often there are dire predictions, and it's very difficult to figure out whether or not those predictions will come true. But there was a time back in 1999 when I wrote a book called The Millennium Bug Debunked. And this was when evangelicals as well as secularists were mining the subjunctive. They were cultivating the seed of threat buried in each unrealized instance. And they were saying that when the calendar year turned in the year 2000 from 1999, it was going to be the end of civilization as we know it. You talk about luminaries in the Christian world, James Dobson, at the time, D. James Kennedy, R.C. Sproul, many of them friends of mine, saying that this was going to be a global catastrophe. In fact, James Dobson said, when my book came out, that I was going to have the blood of millions of people on my hands because I was causing complacency within the body of Christ. The reason I bring that up is there was an end date there. The year 2000, we would know whether Y2K was what it pretended to be, or we would know the opposite. In this particular case, it's very hard to know because we have luminaries who are telling us that climate change portends the end of civilization as we know it. Beto O'Rourke repeating what Al Gore said. Al Gore said in 2006, 10 more years, if we don't solve the problem, we're going to have catastrophic results. Beto O'Rourke said it this year. You have AOC saying the same thing. And we could go on, but we need not just to make light of this, but make sense of this. And to do that, I've invited a person that I think is among the foremost experts in the world on the subject, if not the foremost expert. His name is Dr. Patrick Michaels. He's formerly director of the Center for the Study of Science at the Cato Institute. He's a past president of the American Association of State Climatologists. He was program chair for the Committee on Applied Climatology of the American Meteorological Society. He was a research professor of environmental sciences at University of Virginia for 30 years, a contributing author to the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize back in 2007. His writing has been published in major scientific journals. He holds degrees in biological sciences and plant ecology from the University of Chicago and has received a PhD in ecological climatology from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. And he's the author of a new book coming out in November. Same time my book is coming out, by the way, with HarperCollins. His book is titled Scientocracy, The Tangled Web of Public Science and Public Policy. Dr. Patrick Michaels, I have looked forward to having you on the podcast and very, very interested in your new book, Scientocracy. So let's start there. Take us back to the end of World War II when our government began to intrude in the process of science.
Well, actually, we have to go to World War II when Vannevar Bush headed the Office of Special Programs, which included the Manhattan Project to develop the atomic bomb. As that was progressing down the road, Franklin Roosevelt ostensibly wrote him a letter. Actually, Vannevar Bush probably wrote himself a letter and had the president sign it, in which he asked for ways to keep up the research effort of the size of the Manhattan Project after the project had ended and the war was over. And, of course, Vannevar Bush then proposed in a very quick fashion the essential federalization of the scientific enterprise in the United States. And that did evolve over the course of 10 years after World War II.
What happens when science becomes politicized, when politics becomes disguised as science?
Well, I think I might rephrase that question. What happens in scientific fields that are involved in the regulation of people's lives and lifestyles when that scientific support comes from a monopoly provider, which would be the federal government? As you know, money does not get out of Washington with no strings attached.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes, for example, the U.S. Global Change Research Program, which is the central office for climate research and development in the United States, is on a mission to make sure that the issue is prominent and displayed generally in one fashion, meaning a dark and dire fashion, because if it weren't, the reason for its existence would go away. And as you know, federal bureaucracies and other bureaucracies often tend to have reason number one to just keep themselves in existence.
What I am trying to do, Dr. Michaels, is to have people get some kind of a grasp on what's going on. And I suppose to do that, you have to get back to the basics. One of the things that people read about, hear about, over and over again is CO2 emissions. And it's always presented in a pejorative fashion. So when you hear of carbon dioxide, it's a bad thing, but is it necessarily bad?
No. Everything else being equal, if we have more atmospheric carbon dioxide than we had in the past, the surface and lower atmospheric temperatures will warm some. And they have warmed some. But that's not really what people should be talking about. It's not whether it warms or not. It's not whether human beings are a cause or not. It's how much it warms and how it warms. And what we have seen is that the warming that has taken place tends to be about one half as much as has been forecast to take place. And if you look at the way that the temperatures are changing, there is much more warming of the winter temperatures, and therefore the nighttime temperatures, than the daytime temperatures or the summer heat. In fact, you know, if you look at the highest temperatures recorded every summer, say in the continental United States, we have good records that go back well over 100 years, and you will find no change whatsoever. Where you will see the change is the warming of the coldest temperatures of the winter. And I'd like to know, what's so bad about that? Because that is the way it's working out. And by the way, that's what theory predicts would happen also in a greenhouse warming.
But you also have, I mean, if you have CO2 emissions, it seems to me that you have plant food, you have longer growing seasons, you have the greening of the planet. Seems like you have some positive benefits that you never hear about.
You don't hear about them very much, that's for sure. But indeed, they're there. The reason that you hear all these negative stories is the previous administration, the Obama administration, tried to justify its climate policies based upon something that they call the social cost of carbon. It's a result of econometric models coupled with climate models. If you think that's a recipe for disaster, you're probably right. And the answers that you get are very highly predicated upon the assumption to make going into the models. For example, what the future growth of wealth would be, say, in the United States. And they use numbers that I don't think were very defensible. I have submitted work along with Kevin Dyer-Ratna from the Heritage Foundation and Ross McKittrick from the University of Guelph, where we actually used much more realistic values for the future growth of wealth and much more realistic values for the enhancement of agricultural output simply by putting more CO2 in the air. And virtually for every iteration that we ran, the social cost of carbon actually became slightly negative. Not very much negative, but slightly negative. And if we were really using the language strictly, we'd have to say that there is a social benefit if the cost is negative of these CO2 emissions. And yeah, nobody talks about that. Probably because, first of all, the community that is pushing this issue does not want that to be out there, because it would be the end of the issue.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Patrick Michaels. Winston Churchill once declared, "You may have to fight when there is no hope of victory, because it is better to perish than to live as slaves." Churchill sought to awaken those who were reluctant to fight against the advancing Nazi war machine. Today, a spiritual battle is raging as secularism and the iron boot of LGBTQ activism advances, with mass harm caused to young people by transgenderism and a corresponding decline in our religious liberties. Slavery to secularity is imprisoning more and more hearts and minds. For this reason, CRI's ministry is critical, but we need people willing to stand for truth, along with the financial provisions to accomplish its mission. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to end the fiscal year in a position of strength. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. The problem with same-sex attraction conversion therapy is the way it is defined and presented, sometimes inaccurately, sometimes dishonestly. And like other forms of counseling, some of its practitioners have erred grievously, but that hardly calls for an end to sound versions of the practice itself. Other topics include history's bloody mess, why Marxism and socialism always fail, should Christians participate in boycotts, Athanasius, a C.S. Lewis of the early church, honoring dishonorable parents, the historicity of Moses, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.
The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources, along with a complimentary subscription to the Christian Research Journal, are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org. Has God spoken? Are the words of Scripture merely human in origin, or are they in fact the very words of God Himself? 3 years in the making and based on two decades of research and reflection, Hank Hanegraaff's monumental book, Has God Spoken?, answers what is surely the most important question facing our world. In Has God Spoken? Memorable Proofs of the Bible's Divine Inspiration, Hank counters the contentions of the Bible attackers and clearly shows that belief in the Holy Scriptures is not a guess or wishful thinking. It is the only logical conclusion after an honest examination of overwhelming evidence. Order Has God Spoken? From the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. Equip.org. In our post-truth age of confusion, the need for Christians to be equipped with answers has never been greater. The Christian Research Institute exists to provide those answers, and this provision is made possible only by people like you. People unafraid to stand up for truth while it's under assault. People like you whose contributions to our many outreaches are making a difference for time and eternity. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute during the key month of June to ensure that we end the financial year in a position of strength. To make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, simply call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit us at equip.org. Thank you. Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. Patrick Michaels in their conversation.
Let's talk about what has been said in the past. If you look at climate change, it used to be called global warming. So the euphemisms that are being used have changed over time, but they're meant to push a particular narrative. I still remember back in 1974, Time magazine had an article that talked about the coming global ice age. I bring that up because there are always periods in which there is cooling, there are periods in which there's warming. So climate change is something that we ought to take for granted. It is part of the warp and woof of what happens in climatology in general.
Correct. And so, if I could, how do you want to approach that subject?
Well, what I'm trying to get at here is that the narrative changes all the time and the euphemisms change. Now we're talking about climate change, but there's nothing particularly controversial about climate change. Climate is always changing, and the narrative is also changing, so it's a mixed bag. If you go back, as I said, to 1974, you have Time pontificating that we're headed into an ice age.
Oh, yeah. Well, what happened is, first of all, it didn't warm at the rate that it was supposed to warm. And nobody could really come up, in all seriousness, with it being a net negative. And so then people started to blame weather events rather than climate events. Climate is a long period phenomenon. They would take a hurricane that hit, say, in the Philippines and say, this is a severe hurricane because of global warming, not actually questioning, are hurricanes becoming stronger or getting more frequent as the surface temperature goes up? The answer is there's no evidence at all for that on a global scale. But then every weather event is linked not to global warming, but to so-called climate change. And that, to me, has been what I would call the de-sciencing of the climate change issue, as the historian of science, Karl Popper, noted repeatedly. If you have a theory that explains everything, if you can ascribe anything to that theory, you're not doing science anymore because you have just come up with an untestable theory.
At our institute, we oftentimes talk about the fact that you have to learn to ask the right questions and ask the right questions in the right sequence. I did a podcast with Dr. Jay Richards, and he was talking about the fact that we need to pose the question, is the Earth warming? How much is the Earth warmed? If it is warming, is human activity causing it? If it's warming, is that actually bad overall? And suppose it's warming, and we're causing it, and it's bad, would implementing any of the policies around today make a difference, or would their cost exceed the benefits? So you have to learn discernment skills with this whole subject, because somehow or other, you have to cut through the fog of the narrative, and people have to be able to get to some place of comfort with this issue, because they're startled. The average person is startled, and they don't know what to think. They hear someone like Cortez talking about the fact that we have 12 years, or Beto O'Rourke saying we have 10 years, or as I mentioned in the introduction, you have Al Gore saying back in 2006, we have essentially 10 years to save the planet. So they hear these kinds of alarmist pontifications, and they don't know what to make of it.
Of course. And, you know, I think people also get rightfully tired of these pronouncements. I mean, they can see that, generally speaking, people are much better off than they were 100 years ago. In fact, in the industrialized world, life expectancy has approximately doubled, and per capita wealth has gone up roughly 11-fold. I'm not saying that global warming caused that, but it sure as heck didn't stop it. And people know that. They pick that up. And that's one of the reasons they're very skeptical. And in fact, I think the louder people scream about it, the more people get turned off by the issue, because they can see all these things.
I hope you're right about that. You think back to, you mentioned the previous administration where Obama made this the second most significant issue in his inauguration speech. After healthcare, he talked about the global warming crisis and what needed to be done. And if, in fact, these kinds of politicians have their way, we're going to spend tens of trillions of dollars of the global economy with our eye on the wrong ball.
That is correct. But, you know, I don't think people really, really want to do that because, first of all, they know people like me, malcontents like me, will actually put out some facts. Like if the United States cut its emissions to zero today and kept them at zero all the way to the year 2100, that using the UN's computer models and the models that the Obama administration liked so much, that would only reduce net warming by a couple of tenths of a degree Celsius. It would reduce it maybe from, you know, 3.2 to 3.0 degrees Celsius, if you believe those models. So what in the world can we do about this issue that's reasonable? And the answer is probably continue to do what we have been doing, which is create things more efficiently or create things that work more efficiently. We can see that in the switchover from coal to natural gas for electrical generation. As a result, the United States has dropped its net emissions of carbon dioxide more than any other industrialized country on Earth. And we did it without the Paris Accord. We did it with simply a free market. And some very smart people discovering how to very effectively break the rocks underneath our feet and release natural gas from shale formations down there. And we have hundreds of years worth of that. So the economy will continue to become more efficient over time.
Talk about the different computer models and the danger inherent in extrapolating trends.
Yeah, well, we have to go again by the latest model compendium, which was actually out in 2013 from the United Nations. The new one is going to be coming out, I think, later this year or early next year. And it will have a slightly different family of models. Ironically, I think they might even be hotter than the current family, which is going to make them off by even more than the current ones are off. But the United Nations has about 32 different families of models, and you can look at how well they track temperature changes in the areas of the planet that are climatically very critical. I would pick on the tropics, the lower atmosphere between, say, 20 degrees north latitude and 20 degrees south latitude. And what you can see is all the models are way off, predicting several times more warming than is being observed in the upper levels of the lower atmosphere. That has enormous consequences because almost all the moisture that falls in the mid-latitudes in the United States, for example, originates in the tropics. And that gets into the air based upon how buoyant the tropical air is. These models are predicting the air to become less buoyant, which would inject less moisture into the atmosphere. That would probably not be a good thing, but in fact, it's changing very, very little. And we find no real evidence for systematic and predictable large changes in precipitation anywhere on Earth. I would like to segue into how people abuse this issue. The whole problem in Syria, ISIS, and all this unrest and all this killing, the Obama folk would glibly claim that that was caused by global warming. Well, I took a look at what the computer models say should be happening in that part of the world, and they do indeed project slight decreases in precipitation. But what's really gone on in Syria over the course of the last 40 years or so is rainfall has dropped a mere 10%, which is a drop in the bucket, literally. And the population has gone up 300%. So what strains the infrastructure more? A 10% change in precipitation or a 300% change in the number of people using that precipitation? I assure you it's the latter.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Be sure to tune in again next time when we will continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Patrick Michaels. June is one of the most important months for the Bible Answer Man broadcast. That's because we close out another financial year, and we can do so successfully only if listening friends like you stand with us prayerfully and financially. With your gift in these final days of June, you'll help the Christian Research Institute impact even more lives with God's truth and equip Christians as authentic disciples of Christ. Please call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271, or simply visit online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter.
The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Marxism, rebranded as socialism today, is making a comeback, and in the politics of the progressive left, the makeover is complete. But Marxist theory suffers the same malady as every materialist theory. It contradicts the existence of the theorist. Other topics include, what's the problem with conversion therapy? Does Galatians 5 forbid the use of medicine? The films of Alfred Hitchcock in the age of Instagram, honoring dishonorable parents. Athanasius, a C.S. Lewis of the early church, the historicity of Moses, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or subscribe online at equip.org. That's equip.org.